John Cena. John.
Shut the fuck up! Jesus Christ!
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street!
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat! You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
That's a lot of Johns. Something like 33 different times that fucker said John Cena's name at the end of Raw last Monday. You heard them all there. I got a lot to say about that show on Monday, and JBL making an ass out of himself on Twitter. That's all coming up in the Raw review. It is not one to be missed. First of all, though, Happy New Year! This is the first sound-off of 2015, our eighth year. It is Friday, January 2nd, 2015. I am the Solid Monster. If I sound a little bit different on the podcast this week, it is because I am under the weather. Not the way I was hoping to start the new year, but what the hell are you going to do? As many of you saw online, I made a trip to the doctor's office, and in an ironic twist of fate, ended up being prescribed a Z-Pak. Took every fiber of my being not to bust out laughing in that doctor's office, but I didn't. I haven't shit my pants either yet, but I'll let you know if I do. Possibly during the show. Anything can happen. Thank you, whoever you are, to the three people. Like, literally in the first hour of 2015, we had three different people sign up for Audible using our link, audibletrial.com/solidmonster. Getting the new year off on the right foot, you can get a 30-day trial of the Audible service. You get one free audio book that you get to keep. We got a bunch of wrestling books up you could choose from. Chris Jericho's new book is narrated on there. Steve Austin's book, Terry Funk's book, More Than Just Hardcore. Again, these are books that you would have to buy for $25, $30, in some cases more. Why do that? Get a book for free. Use our link, audibletrial.com/solidmonster. We are extending the offer into 2015, and hopefully you guys can take advantage of that. Have some PayPal donations to get to as well. I've already gotten a bunch for the new year, so thank you for that. You can make a donation on thesolidmonster.com. You'll see the box on the right-hand side. Shout-outs to Chuck Lunatic Lentz, Gavin Ghostface Rankin, Playboy Tiago Lorero, Ray Big Dog Blick, Javon Bruiser Balak, Man Up Manny Alcantara, Ruthless Richard Glassband, Guilty as Charged Mark Court, Sean Nasty Boy Nilsson, Rin the Chin Seacrest, Music Man Zach Brooks, David Sold Out Solis, as in he sells out arenas all over the world, Homeboy Hittin' Dave, and Scorpion Scott Kina. Thank you guys so much for making a donation. Again, you can do so on thesolidmonster.com. It's always the most direct way to support the sound off. Or you can buy a t-shirt in our Pro Wrestling Tee store. ProWrestlingTees.com/solidmonstersoundsoff. Got notified by Pro Wrestling Tees this week that we were one of the top-selling podcast stores on Pro Wrestling Tees in all of 2014. That is awesome, especially when you consider that our store has only been up since September. So for the entire year, 2014, even though we were only up for about three and a half months, we were one of the top sellers on the entire website. So I thank you very much for that. That's very cool. And we got 11 different designs up. We have more in the pipeline coming up in the very near future. So head on over to ProWrestlingTees.com/SolidMonsterSoundsOff. I've had some questions from you guys asking me, you know, how do the shirts run? Do they run bigger? Do they run smaller? I've gotten a couple of shirts from them before, including from our store. I have to pay for them just like everybody else does. I think they're pretty accurate. I mean, I did make the mistake once of buying a medium because it does depend. I mean, I can buy a medium shirt, for example, from a different website and it fits fine. I can buy a medium, you know, in a store and it's too tight. It really just depends. The medium that I bought once ran a little tight, so I went for the large. You might want to do the same, but we have shirts in all different sizes. I think they go up to 4 or 5 XL, ship all over the world. So head on over to the store and check out what we got in there. This is a big weekend. There's not only a UFC pay-per-view with a big fight, Jones and Cormier. We have the New Japan Pro Wrestling pay-per-view, Wrestle Kingdom 9, which is airing on, I guess it's early Sunday morning Eastern. 2 a.m. Eastern is the start time. It runs for 4 hours. I'm pretty sure I'm not watching the show live. I'm going to wait. I'm going to hold off until the replay Sunday night. That's part of the reason why I wanted to get the podcast done a couple days early this week. I have a feeling I will try to stay offline or stay off Twitter, maintain some radio silence on Sunday, and head into the pay-per-view fresh. Whatever you're doing, whether you're watching it live or not, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I would urge you to check it out. If you've never seen the New Japan product before, you're in for a treat. This is their biggest event of the year. It's a stacked card. And if you're interested in it, because you can get the Japanese commentary, if you're interested, you can pay full price for the pay-per-view like I am, or get it on the, I guess there's a thing called the Flips app, and on there you can get the American commentary with good old JR, Jim Ross, and Matt Stryker, both of whom are in Tokyo. They will be calling the event. And if you are ordering the event on New Japan World, which is their streaming service, it's a lot cheaper than it is to buy the pay-per-view, but you don't get the American commentary, so just be aware of that. I'm looking forward to this a lot. I'm looking forward to how JR does on commentary. I'm looking forward to a lot of the matches. Seeing guys like Nakamura and Ibushi, and of course the main event, Tanahashi and Okada, they've had a whole bunch of matches. Although I think this is their first match in 14 or 15 months. So they've managed to keep these guys apart. So I'm very much looking forward to that. And I will probably have thoughts next weekend on the Sound Off. I don't think I'll have time to do an extra the day after the show, so I may just save my thoughts for next weekend. Check it out. You will not be disappointed. Let's talk about Raw from Monday night, the final episode of Raw of 2014, live from Washington, D.C. I got a lot to say about this show. It's a good show. I thought it's probably the best episode of Raw in weeks. That might be low praise. I'm probably grading on a bit of a curve. I thought it was good overall, but got a lot of thoughts. We'll start with Christian. Christian has apparently, quietly, retired. Or been retired by WWE, maybe more accurate. He may not have had a choice in the matter. Edge and Christian were the guest hosts on Raw Monday, and in passing, Jerry Lawler on commentary mentioned that Christian was retired, and then Paul Heyman brought it up in his promo that it was due to repeated concussions. That was the first official confirmation I had heard that the guy was retired, even though one of you, I forgot who, pointed out that Randy Orton apparently mentioned, he slipped in a little mention about Christian being retired on the peep show that Christian did on the Night of Champions pre-show. I don't remember any of this, but I didn't see that mention anywhere at the time. So I was not the only one who was caught off guard by hearing these comments on Monday. And I felt like I should be more surprised than I was by how casually they threw that out there, almost like it was an afterthought. This guy who's been part of their roster dating back to 1998, you know, now he did take a few years off. He was gone for about 4 years. He went to go work for TNA. But his WWE career dates back to the Attitude Era. But I wasn't. I wasn't surprised at all when you remember the stories of what Vince McMahon supposedly thinks of the guy. The guy's retirement deserved more than just a passing mention. And I was reminded of a column that I did last year for the Layfield Report on why Christian was WWE's most underappreciated talent. Not underrated, because that's something completely different, but underappreciated in that you don't know what you got till it's gone. I wrote the article, it was after, I went back and I found it, and I wrote it after a Memphis street fight that Christian had on Raw with Sheamus last year that I thought was very entertaining. And I wrote about how the guy is a hell of a lot closer to the end of his career than he is the beginning of it. Yet, he continues to have consistently good matches, week after week, with whoever he steps in the ring with. The match in Memphis was awesome. Both guys were applauded when it was over. Yet week after week, the commentators, and JBL in particular, no doubt at the behest of the Irish madman in his ear, would talk about nothing but how ugly Christian is and how he should have a blue dot over his face. And so here we are months later. The guy finally is retired. And true to form, WWE continues to disrespect him by their handling of this whole thing. And it just feels wrong. You know, it's wrong when you consider what an asset this guy has been to the company for years, especially when he came back as part of the ECW brand in 2009. They had him working matches with a young Jack Swagger, Ezekiel Jackson. Ezekiel Jackson had the best matches of his career with Christian. The best matches I've ever seen the guy have in any promotion were with Christian. That's not by accident. Christian had a lot to do with elevating those guys, especially Swagger at that time, you know, and grooming them for bigger things down the road. That was his role. It was the role that Benoit probably would have had had he not killed himself. The grizzled vet there to bring some legitimacy to the brand and to work with the younger guys on the roster. That was his role. The other thing that made Christian so damn good was that he could play whatever role you needed him to. He was an awesome babyface in peril, and he was an even better slimy, whiny heel. You know, he could play either one to a hilt. I think people forget what a great babyface Christian was. He would always find a way to get the crowd behind him and into the near falls, even if it was slow going and the match was kind of slow and boring. I mean, depending on who he was in the ring with, by the end, it's kind of like Dolph Ziggler now. You know, Dolph Ziggler can be in kind of a boring match, but by the end, the people are into the near falls, they're going crazy. Christian had that ability. He was that kind of performer. Not everybody can do that. It takes a special talent, it takes a special connection to the fans to be able to pull that out of the fans, and he was able to do that. And I ended the column that I did for the Layfield Report by saying, let's not overlook what the man brings to the table and acknowledge how much that he's going to be sorely missed once he hangs up the tights. And hopefully WWE can connect the dots and do the same, so long as one of those dots isn't blue. I thought that was a clever way to end the column. But that's how I ended it. And here we are now almost a year later after I wrote that, and I'm sorry to say they failed to do that. But that doesn't mean that we all can't give the guy his props. His feud with Randy Orton was the feud of the year in 2011. His comedy, unlike others on the roster, was always entertaining. Always got a laugh out of me. I mean, put it this way. I've laughed out loud more times at Christian's jokes than I have John Cena's. I mean, that's a feud that WWE dropped the ball on also back in 05, if you remember. Probably one of the reasons Christian left for TNA, too. I don't know if he's ever said that, but wouldn't surprise me if that was one of the things that led to him leaving. He saw the writing on the wall. He had this ready-made feud with John Cena that the people seemed to be into. You know, they had one or two promos on TV that were pretty entertaining back and forth. And Vince McMahon had so little faith in the guy that they just moved on. And they never really gave us that program between the two of them. And I'm sure that hurt him, and I'm sure that really made him realize, you know what, they don't see me on that level, then the hell with this, I'm going to go somewhere else, and I'm going to be a world champion there. And that's what he did. He went to TNA and became, a two-time NWA world champion. Not that the NWA title has really meant anything in a couple of decades, but still, he went somewhere else and had some success for himself. But that's a few that they definitely dropped the ball on, and yeah, that was back when Christian had Tomko in his corner as his bodyguard. It was really funny. I don't know. I don't know why they never took advantage of that. I've also been asked by email, you guys have emailed me a lot, what do I think are some of Christian's best matches that I could recommend that you go back and watch? You know, I thought about it, and you know, I didn't put a full like list together in any kind of order. The matches that I think about when I think of Christian and some of the ones that I enjoyed the most, you have to go back to that tag team ladder match, No Mercy 99, Edge and Christian against the Hardys. That was the precursor to all of the TLC matches that would come later on. That was an awesome match. And unlike anything WWE had ever done before, like a tag team ladder match, we had never seen that before. That's a match worth going out of your way to see. The TLC match is obviously, personally, my favorite, probably TLC 2 at WrestleMania 17. I enjoyed the hell out of TLC 3, which aired on SmackDown. They had Jericho and Benoit in there. Those probably are my two favorites. He had a match with Chris Jericho at WrestleMania 20 that doesn't get talked about a lot. That was the match where Trish turned heel, turned on Jericho, went with Christian. That was a pretty good match. There was an Intercontinental title ladder match on Raw. I want to say it was September of 2003. I sometimes get it confused with the ladder match that Eddie Guerrero had with RVD. But it was Christian RVD in a ladder match on Raw. Awesome match. Definitely go back and find that on YouTube, I guess, if you can, since it's not on the network. his return to ECW in 2009, you know, I remember being really bummed out by that because supposedly there was a plan for Christian to come back to be the one to turn on Jeff Hardy, who was the WWE champion at that time, and he was going to feud with Jeff Hardy, but then, you know, word leaked on the internet, and Vince freaked out, and he changed plans. He went with Matt Hardy turning on his brother instead, and Christian was sent to the ECW brand, which was like the redheaded bastard child of WWE at that time. But he kind of made it his own. Again, working with guys like Swagger and Jackson, he had a lot of really good matches on that brand, and I can't tell you which one specific match to go back and find. I remember he had some really good matches with Jack Swagger. I don't know if any of them were on pay-per-view. They may have been. So I'd go back and try to find some of those. The matches with Randy Orton in 2011, they had so many of them. It did get tiring after a while, but I almost didn't mind it because those two guys, for example, unlike John Cena and Randy Orton, and they could talk about what great rivals they are all they want to, just because you put two guys in the ring together 15 million times doesn't mean that they're storied rivals. I still maintain that Cena and Orton do not have good chemistry together. I don't care how many times you put them in the ring together. They're big stars, but that doesn't mean that they have good chemistry the way that John Cena and Edge had chemistry, the way that John Cena and CM Punk had chemistry, or the way that Christian and Randy Orton had chemistry. Orton had much better matches with Christian than he did John Cena. And the best ones, I think, the ones that I enjoyed the most, were probably that very first one on SmackDown, the one that pissed everybody off. It was a couple of days after Christian had won the world title from Del Rio at the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. He went on SmackDown, and they had Orton beat him right away and win the title. But that was actually a really great match. And the match they had, I think it was like a no DQ match at SummerSlam that year. Awesome match. Both of those matches I would highly recommend. As far as his TNA run, honestly, I wasn't really paying close attention to TNA at that time. I actually went to a couple of shows that had Christian in the main event against Kurt Angle. I'm sure Christian and Kurt Angle probably had some kick-ass matches. I just couldn't pinpoint one for you. I'm sure he had some great ones with AJ Styles and Samoa Joe, because those were the guys in the main event at that time. Christian, I'm sure, could have a great match with any of those guys. So when you really look at his body of work, it's something that you got to respect. I mean, the guy, maybe he wasn't, you know, at the top of the heap, but he had a hell of a career for himself, and like I said earlier, I feel like he deserved better than just the passing mention on television. I never expected a guy like Christian to have like a retirement celebration like Ric Flair, even Edge. I remember when Edge retired, he did the speech on Raw, then he was on SmackDown, then he may have been on Raw, I don't remember. He was on television so many times, after a while it's like, okay, we get the point, you're retired. Just, you know, I don't know, give the guy a microphone, let him say a few words. I just feel like they could have done more, and so I wanted to do what they didn't do and say a few words about Christian. And I think he's still under contract to them for supposedly for like another year, so he's still with them. As far as the Hall of Fame goes, I've been asked that too. Do I think he'll be in the Hall of Fame? I think Edge already being in the Hall of Fame works against Christian. It'd be a lot easier to say, well, they'll put Edge and Christian in together because they were a great tag team and they're so linked. Edge is already in. I don't know that... Well, you know what? I do see Christian going in. I think Christian is a guy that was a big enough name in that era and even in recent years. But like I said, he goes back to the Attitude Era, and they always glorify the Attitude Era. All the titles he won, all the big ladder matches that he was in. I think all those guys will eventually be in the Hall of Fame. The Dudley boys will be in there. The Hardy boys will be in there. You can't have the Hardys, the Dudleys, and Edge in the Hall of Fame at some point and not have Christian in there. I mean, you talk about a slap in the face. So, yeah, I'm sure Christian will be in the Hall of Fame. I don't see there being any great rush to put him in. But, yeah, I definitely think he'll get in there at some point, and deservedly so. There were no blowaway matches on Raw this week, but there was a lot that happened. Some of it was actually really good. The two main things coming out of the show is that the Authority is back only a month after Survivor Series, which renders that whole stipulation completely pointless. But that's par for the course with match stipulations in WWE. And Daniel Bryan is back. He has officially entered himself into the 2015 Royal Rumble, and with the Authority being back in power, I think we all know what that probably means as far as Bryan in the Rumble match and what number he'll probably be getting. But he has been cleared to return. He apparently found a doctor in Denver who was able to accurately diagnose and treat his lingering nerve issues. Which begs the question, what kind of quack doctor did WWE have this guy seeing all these months that they couldn't figure out what the hell was wrong with him? You know, they flip-flop so many times, supposedly, on, he's going to have surgery. No, you don't need the surgery. Well, you should have the surgery. I mean, where did these guys get their license to practice medicine? Who are these people? Well, he found somebody, and the guy apparently knew exactly what it was and took care of it. Now he's cleared. Now, you know, I hear that. I'm surprised they didn't shovel the guy with Z-Packs while they were at it. Obviously, this is fantastic news for Brian. I'm sure he's just happy as shit. Great news for WWE because they get back one of their biggest stars, one of their best performers, a main event player on the roster, which they desperately need more of right now. Who it's not good news for, I think, is Roman Reigns. Poor Roman Reigns. They're trying to get this guy over as the company's next big star. He will be the company's next big star, even though people may not want to hear that, and he probably is the right guy for the role. Again, people may not want to hear that, but that's a fact. It will be him. It may take a little bit longer now, but it's going to be him, so you better get used to it. This, however, will not do him any favors. In fact, I would say that if Daniel Bryan is in the Rumble match, I don't see how he doesn't win. He should win. He never technically lost the title. He was never beaten for it. Now, the Authority is back, so it makes sense that they wouldn't just hand him a title shot, so he's got to win the Rumble to kind of earn it. Last year, they kept Bryan out of the Rumble. It blew up in their face. This year, they're in Philadelphia. Now, you never know how the crowd is going to react, but I think it's a recipe for disaster now if Bryan doesn't win that match. I think the only other babyface right now you could give that Rumble win to, if a babyface is going to win, and not have it blow up in your face, not get any backlash from the crowd that night, would probably be Dolph Ziggler. Maybe Dean Ambrose, maybe. And Ziggler is my dark horse pick. I don't realistically see him winning. I just don't see it happening. Reigns is going to be the guy, okay? But it may serve them better to wait a little bit longer. The fans in the building on Monday were way into Daniel Bryan. He's still over, hasn't lost any momentum, which is awesome to see. And if Lesnar can get past John Cena at the Royal Rumble, which I'm still not convinced he will, we may get that elusive Daniel Bryan versus Brock Lesnar match that I first pitched a year ago. I pitched it originally for last year's WrestleMania, but the same thing applies now. David versus Goliath, especially if Brock is leaving after WrestleMania, which most people seem to think he is. You've got Bryan, you know, slaying the beast. I mean, it's a great story. The story just writes itself. Punk gave Brock the best match that he's had since he came back to WWE. Match of the year in 2013. Bryan could do the same thing. Yes, he is coming off a major injury, that's true. But here's, I think, something that people are forgetting. Okay, keep this in mind. Bryan has not had any neck issues since last summer. People keep talking about his neck. I don't know if his neck can hold up. His neck surgery was in May. He hasn't been out because of neck issues. He's been out because of a nerve issue that was preventing him from regaining strength in his arm. That's something completely different. It could have been as simple as a pinched nerve, a blocked nerve. Had nothing to do with the neck. His neck has had 6 months to heal from what at that time was a minor operation. It's not like he had fucking fusion surgery like Austin and Edge did. It was a minor neck procedure. It happened 6 months ago. You know, people think he's been out with that injury. That's not the case. I think he'll hold up just fine in there with Brock. He won't, he won't evaporate into a pile of dust and ash. The guy will be fine. I was also surprised by how many people thought WWE made a mistake by not holding off Bryan's return as a surprise for the Rumble match. Look, I like surprises as much as the next guy, but that would have been a big mistake. You know, Bryan's return should be a big deal that gets more eyeballs on the pay-per-view, that gets more eyeballs on that network. And what it also does, and this is what I like, is that it creates even more interest in the Rumble match because all of a sudden you've got at least one other name other than Roman Reigns who could realistically win the whole damn thing. You know, there were a lot of people before, of course, Roman Reigns is going to win. It's so predictable. Dolph Ziggler doesn't have a chance. Dean Ambrose is not going to win. He's been a loser on television every single week. And by the way, I wouldn't completely disqualify the possibility of either of those guys winning, although I don't think they will. So even if Bryan is the only other name that creates some interest. At least now you have two. You have two realistic potential choices for who could win this Rumble match instead of there being one. To me, that's a good thing. And if they do make Bryan enter at number one, if that's the storyline that they end up going with, that's not a story that you can tell if you throw the guy in there as a random surprise. You know, we're going to have a few surprises in the Rumble. I don't know who they'll be, although I made the prediction last week that Bully Ray would be one of them. So, you know, that's my prediction. But we always get surprises in the Rumble match. It doesn't have to be Bryan. Bryan should not be one of them. And, you know, the more I think about this, the Royal Rumble and potentially who it could come down to, man, can you imagine a Final Four of Daniel Bryan, Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose, and Dolph Ziggler? The people would be going out of their minds if it came down to those four guys. I'm getting excited just thinking about it, and the show's still a month away. So Edge and Christian opened the show with some comedy. Edge was wearing a Sami Zayn shirt, which was awesome. This segment went 15 minutes, felt a lot shorter than it normally does. Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman came out, followed by John Cena. He went to attack Heyman. When Brock came over, Cena got him up on his shoulders for the AA. Brock escaped. He ran away. Not the way that I would be handling Brock Lesnar, but I guess, you know, he's a heel. So if you're a heel in WWE, you always have to run away. And as Heyman says, Brock don't fight for free, which is true. Brock Lesnar has not wrestled a match on Raw in probably 10 years or so. It's been a long time. Although, I was thinking about this. Brock's last date, supposedly, is not WrestleMania. It's the Raw after WrestleMania. So, if he drops the title of WrestleMania, I wonder if they would have Brock, you know, cash in his rematch on Raw the night after to pop a big number, since he's probably leaving anyway. This is all under the assumption that Brock is as good as gone when his contract is up, probably back to UFC. That's my prediction. So if that's the case, why not have one big Brock Lesnar match on Raw before the guy goes away? You know, let's say they do Reigns and Lesnar, or even Bryan and Lesnar at Mania. They win the title, but then Seth Rollins cashes in and he wins the championship. You could have Brock Lesnar against Seth Rollins the very next night, or even do a three-way if you want to with either Reigns or Bryan, either one of them, whoever's in the Mania main event. And at the end of that match on Raw, Paul Heyman can help Seth Rollins retain the title. He turns on Brock. You know, that way they have a reason to keep Heyman around on TV. And when Brock eventually comes back, which you know he will, he can come back as a babyface killer. You know, we don't get WWE title matches on Raw very often anymore. So I think that would be a huge match. And if the guy's leaving, then why the hell not? Dolph Ziggler and Rusev had a match, champion against champion. At one point, Rusev used Dolph's spot where he drops a whole series of elbows on his opponent's chest, which would have been nice for the announcers to acknowledge, but they said nothing. I'm not even sure why they bother having announcers on these shows anymore, other than just to plug their shit. Jerry Lawler, by the way, is in the hospital right now. He's suffering from diverticulitis. Not sure if he'll be on Raw this Monday. That sounds like no fun. Hopefully he gets well soon. Feel free to take all the time you need, Jerry. No rush. Diverticulitis is nothing to mess with. That's what ended Brock's UFC career. So, yeah, no fun. The match itself, Ziggler and Rusev was fine. I hated this. And here's why I hated this. I hated this because, and this is a massive problem that I have right now with WWE, they give us the dreaded fuck finish. Now, I should probably be happy they didn't just have Rusev beat Dolph clean in the middle of the ring, but looking at what they did here, I'm not sure why they didn't just do that. You know, instead Dolph lost because Rusev was kicking his ass too much in the corner, and the referee called for the DQ when he wouldn't break the count. Meanwhile, Rusev put him in the accolade after the match anyway. Dolph's screaming for his life. Just lame. Lame, lame, lame. If the argument is, well, they didn't want to beat Dolph because he's the Intercontinental Champion and he's been getting something of a push lately, then here's a suggestion for you, okay? Don't book the match. How about that? You want to do the finish where the guy gets DQ'd for kicking ass? How about not doing it with your Intercontinental Champion? But it's the sign of a larger problem in WWE. You know, I look at the SmackDown spoilers. So for those of you who are listening to the show on Friday before the show airs, if you are very sensitive to SmackDown spoilers, then skip ahead by 2 minutes. But I looked at the SmackDown spoilers for this week, and I see Big Show versus Ryback and Rusev against Roman Reigns, which they've done before. And every single time, there's a fuck finish or a non-finish to the match. It was no different with either of these matches on SmackDown this week. As soon as I read that those matches were announced, if I'm in that live crowd, I know right away, fuck finish. I mean, who could possibly get excited about these matches when you know going in that you're getting fucked? And the longer these matches go, the worse it is, because there's no payoff in the end. It'd be one thing if it was like a two-minute match. Some of these matches will go 10, 12, 15 minutes, only to get a fuck finish or no finish at all in the end. I mean, you know, if WWE insists on fucking the fans over so many times, the least they can do is buy us dinner first. Ryback ran down to save Dolph from Doom. That led to the next segment, which I actually liked a lot, because they did something here that they never do anymore. They gave us actual character development. Now, I know some of you didn't like this. You don't think Ryback, you know, the big guy that he is, should be out there talking about his life story. That didn't bother me. It didn't bother me because this is something that I think they need to be doing more of to get people like me to actually give a shit about these guys, and they've done a poor job of doing that. So how can I sit here and complain when they finally do it? You know what I mean? So I'm not complaining about this at all. I like that they did this. I've been crowing about this for months now. And then I did that rant a week or two ago on this very subject with The New Day. So I was very happy to see them let the big guy tell us his story and give us a reason to want to see him take the U.S. title from Rusev. You know, now to be fair, it did feel like he was rushing through things. It was not a great promo. It really was not a great promo. But it accomplished what it had to, and I'd like to see them do more of this in the future. It also should have happened over a year ago, but, you know, better late than never. I did want to crush the tracheas of the idiots in the crowd who chanted "What?" as Ryback spoke. That goddamn chant is absolutely one of the worst things to ever happen to pro wrestling. I mean, for all of the good that Steve Austin brought to pro wrestling, far more good than bad, you know, he's got to own that one. That is one of the worst fucking things to happen to wrestling ever in its history. Ryback basically retold the story he told on Chris Jericho's podcast, which I listened to a few weeks ago. I mean, why is that a bad thing? Why were people saying, oh, it's just the same story he told on Jericho's podcast? Should he have told someone else's story? I don't understand the logic there. I don't get the criticism. So what? This show gets 3 to 4 million people, somehow by the grace of God, to watch every single week. How many of those people do you think really listen to Chris Jericho's podcast? These were just people looking for something to complain about in this segment. If that's the biggest criticism you can lob at this, then you've got nothing to criticize. I thought this was fantastic. Now, this makes things interesting because Ryback has got his momentum back. He's almost back in the same position that he was in when he walked into that cell against CM Punk in 2012 before he got beat for the first time. He's not quite at that level, but he's as over now as he has been since then. He almost has to win, or else you kill whatever life the guy has. Assuming they do the first match at the Rumble, I don't know if they are or not. They may just put both of them in the Rumble match. But if they do that first match at the Royal Rumble, they could do a draw. They could do a DQ. In this case, it would actually make sense for them to do a finish like that if they were going to bring it back for a rematch at WrestleMania. I would not be against Ryback being the one to beat Rusev. Especially if he can maintain this momentum and they can keep building on it and the people are into the guy. I mean, you know, anybody but Cena. Anybody but Cena. Even Orton. I'm not enamored with the idea, let's say, of Randy Orton and Rusev having a feud and Orton being the one to end it, but, you know, I could actually live with that more than I could if they just threw him to the wolves, if they just threw him to John Cena and had Cena be the one to get the big win. I don't think I could stomach that. But I feel like they've come this far with the undefeated streak. To blow it off at the Royal Rumble when you're so close to WrestleMania, it just doesn't feel right to me. If you're going to end it, it should be at Mania, but then you need a finish for the first match with Ryback. So it's a tough spot for him to be in. I hope if they go that route, it doesn't hurt him too bad, and then he could get the big win at Mania. And they could build it up as this great story of redemption, especially coming off that promo he cut on Monday night, coming back from the injuries and all the stuff that people have said about him. And don't think that that promo wasn't directly aimed at CM Punk, because it was. So they can build this up as a story of redemption for the guy, and it could be a big moment for him. But if they just end up feeding Ryback to Rusev on the road to John Cena, I just don't see how that does anybody any good. And if they do that, it's the final nail in the coffin for Ryback. Now, on the other hand, if they really wanted to get somebody new over, you keep Rusev undefeated until Raw the night after WrestleMania, and then you can promote a new guy from NXT, and the name that keeps popping in my head is Baron Corbin. They're building this guy up as like the next big thing. He's got the size that they like. I mean, he's not really jacked. He's a tall guy. He's got a certain look to him. I know there are people that are just, between my defense of Roman Reigns and now my praise for Baron Corbin, they're probably rolling their eyes right now. That's too bad, because at the end of the day, they clearly have big plans for this guy. And I like what I've seen so far. The thing is, I haven't seen enough. Okay, I will admit, I have not seen enough from this guy. But you could promote Baron Corbin from NXT. You know, they usually do debut somebody new that night after WrestleMania. They did with Paige, for example, this past year. You can promote him, and he beats Rusev in 30 seconds, or beats him in a minute with the End of Days, his finish. And then, boom, new star made in one night. Now, the only problem is we haven't seen Baron Corbin go longer than maybe 40 seconds in a match on TV. That's kind of a problem. So we don't really know how good the guy is. I mean, I've read things from people that have seen him work that say he's actually going to impress people when they let him wrestle longer matches. I hope that's true. But they've got 3 months. I mean, they've got time. They've got the next 3 months to show us how good this guy really is, to show us that he can go more than a minute. And if they do that, and he shows that he can go in the ring, and he's at least a decent performer, shit, I'd pull the trigger on it. I mean, they need to make as many new stars as possible. I'm tired of seeing the same recycled faces over and over again, start and stop, start and stop. They need new faces. So why not? Why not go with somebody new? I'd be okay with that, too. Nikki Bella beat Natalya. 1 minute and 6 seconds with the rack attack. I'm giving this about as much time as they did, because this was a waste of time. They throw these women out there for a minute so they could get their footage that they'll splice into their Total Divas episodes. It's a waste of time. Who gives a shit? The Usos beat Miz and Mizdow to become two-time tag team champions. If you noticed, a lot of super kicks in this match, on the whole show, really. Apparently, that was not by accident. Supposedly it was done out of spite for the Young Bucks turning down an invitation for a WWE tryout recently. What a spiteful company to work for, if that's true. The Bucks even said something about it on Twitter. They made a comment about all the super kicks, but they were more honored than anything. It did not bother them. They felt honored that they would actually go out of their way and do that. And I say good for them, too. Again, I wish more people were able to tell WWE to fuck off. They seem to be making a nice living for themselves. They split their time between Ring of Honor and New Japan. They do other indies. They'd be jobbing to the New Day on Superstars and would be banned from doing any super kicks. I guarantee you. If they signed and came to WWE, they would tell them, you need a new finish. No super kicks. They'd be on fucking Main Event wrestling. I don't even know what other tag teams. The Ascension or something. So, good for them. We got another attempt at character development with Cesaro. I want to talk about this. He cut a promo before the match with the returning Bad News Barrett. And he alluded to the comments that Vince McMahon made on Steve Austin's podcast about how he has no charisma. He doesn't connect with the fans. So they played off of that. Cesaro says he doesn't care if he connects with the fans. Nobody can touch him when it comes to his ability inside the ring, which, by the way, the crowd popped for when he said that. And I'm not talking about a few fans in the front row, like a few smart fans. There were loud applause when Cesaro made that comment about his in-ring ability. You think Vince McMahon heard that? Of course not. The only thing Vince McMahon heard was Cesaro botching his line at the end of the promo when he meant four sides of the ring. Instead, he said four ropes. There are four ropes, he said. I'm the best thing in these four ropes. And that was it. That will follow him now for the rest of his career, which I'm still hoping ends with him going to New Japan at some point later this year. This actually was not a great promo. I'm not going to sit here and try to convince everybody that it was just because I like the guy, but I have little faith they're going to actually give him more chances after this. They should. They should let him go out there more often and cut promos and get better. And I have no faith. I have no faith that they're going to do that. They probably, it's like Matt Hardy. Yeah, I could use Matt Hardy as an example. If you remember, when Matt Hardy came back and he was doing that feud with Edge, they were playing off the stuff that happened with Edge and Lita in real life. And I think it was actually Vince McMahon who may have been the one in the ring to introduce Matt Hardy, and he handed him the microphone, and that was his big moment. That was Matt Hardy's big moment in the spotlight, and he did not deliver. It was not a great promo at all. And I don't remember them giving him promo time after that. I mean, we're going back like a decade now. I could be wrong, but he had his one big moment in the spotlight. He didn't deliver, and that was it. That was the end of it. And I think every time he went in the ring with Edge, except maybe in that cage match, they did have that cage match on I think it was Unforgiven. But I remember like the match at SummerSlam, another one of those things that got stopped because Edge was kicking too much ass. And then they did the match on Raw where I think Matt lost and he was like banished to the SmackDown brand or something. I mean, they didn't do that guy any favors. And all it took was one time. They give you one chance, and if you don't deliver, that's the end of it. They put you in the fucking scrap heap. And that's exactly what they're going to do with this guy now. And it's not fair, but that's just how it is. And you know what? Even if he didn't botch that line in the promo, he went out there, he cut this promo. Let's say the promo went off without a hitch, right? Everything went great. He said everything he was supposed to say. It got a reaction from the crowd. It wouldn't have mattered anyway. It's not as though they actually had a plan for this guy because he ended up losing. He cut this promo, and then he goes and he loses to Wade Barrett with the bullhammer. And you know what makes me really angry about the way they booked Cesaro since they made him a Heyman guy? And then it was all downhill from there. I had completely forgotten about this, but somebody in our Facebook group posted a link to a match last year, not even a full year ago, on SmackDown between Cesaro and Randy Orton. Orton was the WWE World Heavyweight Champion at the time. He had both belts. And this is when they were trying to give Cesaro some credibility going into the Elimination Chamber match. And Cesaro pinned Randy Orton, the world champion, clean in the middle of the ring with the neutralizer. Let me repeat that again. Cesaro pinned Randy Orton, clean in the middle with the neutralizer. And then Michael Cole talked about what a career-defining moment that was for Cesaro. And what makes me so fucking angry when I see that is what a complete and total waste that win turned out to be. How many times does the WWE champion lose cleanly on TV? How many times has Randy Orton lost cleanly on TV in the last year? Not very often. So you would think when something like that does happen, you better make it mean something, right? But that's not how things work in WWE. And that frustrates me to no end. I was so angry after watching that video, and I just remember being so happy and shocked and impressed, but happy when it first happened, and now I can't even watch that. It makes me so mad. Luke Harper pinned Jack Swagger in an empty arena match. At least that's how it felt. It was as silent as I can ever remember it being for a match on Raw. Not even so much as a heckling fan, just silence for most of the match. At least Harper got a win. He actually ended 2014 with the most losses of anybody in WWE. He lost 136 times last year. And that's according to at Wrestling Facts on Twitter. It's too bad they didn't give him a slammy for that. Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins had a match. So much for that as a possible WrestleMania main event. Not the first time they've given this match away on Raw for free. They actually had a match on the Go Home Raw to the pay-per-view in September where they were supposed to have another match, but it never happened because Reigns got hurt. I still don't understand that. I mean, maybe somebody had some inclination that Roman Reigns was hurt and something was going to happen. I don't know. I just remember they had a match scheduled for the pay-per-view. I guess that would have been Night of Champions in September. And they actually just booked the match on Raw anyway, 6 days before. And they had a long match. And I think Roman Reigns won clean with the spear. So not the first time they've given this match away. I may be in the minority here, but I thought they had a good match. Some people said it was slow, it was boring. It was in the middle, but it was no different than any other match of any length. It goes through its peaks and valleys. Big Show was on commentary. just burying Roman Reigns, which was hilarious. He's all hype. He doesn't have it. It's like he just got done reading a thread in our Facebook group before he went out to the ring. I actually thought Big Show did a great job on commentary. He's done a great job before on SmackDown the few times they let him do it. It's not the first time I've seen him do commentary, so the guy's got a knack for it. I'd rather see the Big Show on headset than in the ring at this point, and I'm sure a lot of you guys would agree. Albert is another one who I've been impressed with on NXT. He's not great yet, but I look at Albert as a guy who's trying really hard. Typically, when he's talking about the matches, he's actually focusing on the matches, trying to get people over. So I like what I've seen from him. You know, if they had a good play-by-play guy under contract right now who is ready to handle 3 hours of Raw every single week, I would love to see them get a shot to do the announcing with either Big Show or Albert as the color guy and just get rid of the Three Stooges. You know, the problem is nothing would change. I was thinking about that. For all the times that we talked about, well, why don't we get somebody new in the announce booth? Who can we put in the announce booth? It doesn't even matter. Nothing would change. They would still have Vince McMahon in their ear. They'd still have their format, their way of having to do things. It almost doesn't even matter who you put in there. Nothing is going to change. I'm not even sure who that play-by-play guy would be, to be honest with you. I mean, I like that guy Rich that they have on NXT. He's not ready yet. I would not put him on Raw. Tom Phillips is doing SmackDown now. He's okay. In no way is he ready for Raw. You know, when I think about TNA, ROH, Lucha Underground, it's like, boy, has the well run dry on great wrestling announcing or what? I can't think of that one person who's head and shoulders better than everybody else. I don't think that person right now exists. Mike Tenay? No. Kevin Kelly? No. Matt Stryker? No. After that, I mean, who else is there? Is Joey Styles? See, here's the thing. I was never the biggest Joey Styles fan. I've made that very clear. And I think he's very happy doing what he's doing now with .com. I don't think he would ever want to return to announcing full-time. But I just got done listening to this guy call a stop-motion match on YouTube with a couple of WWE action figures. He called a match between a Bret Hart action figure and a Daniel Bryan action figure, a submission match. And I could not believe how much better he was to listen to than the announcers that we have today. It was great. He did a great job. He actually called the action. I'm into this match. It's two fucking action figures, and I'm more into this match than I am most matches on Raw every single week. I would get behind a Joey Styles Big Show. Or a Joey Styles Albert announce team, as weird a combination as that sounds. I'd be behind it. I would give him a shot. I'd be okay with that. Now, I mentioned at the top of the podcast that JBL made an ass out of himself on Twitter this week. We may as well do this week's sad tweet right now. Brian Bird in our Facebook group, shout out to Brian, he posted a screenshot from JBL's Twitter account. Now, he's blocked me from his page, so I couldn't check it to see myself. I can't even read his tweets. I'm completely blocked. You know, for somebody who played such a tough guy on TV, he's got some awfully thin skin. I mean, I've had to block a few idiots on there myself, but it takes a lot to get me to do it. This guy has made an Olympic sport out of blocking people on Twitter. But anyway, JBL said, and I quote, "To all those hating, announcers were produced the same since Heenan. Those who say different are lying," end quote. First of all, that is a blatant lie, because back when Bobby Heenan was announcing, they didn't have the app, they didn't have the network, hashtags to plug like they do now. That's a pretty massive change from when Bobby Heenan was announcing. So that's a lie right there. But here's the thing about it, okay? And the criticism must be getting to him because he's so testy about it. Even if what he is saying is true, that's even more of an indictment on the current announcing, because it was never this bad back when Monsoon and Heenan were doing it. And Monsoon and Heenan, look, they're my favorite announce team of all time. And I'm not going to lie, a lot of times they would banter back and forth and not even pay attention so much to what was going on in the ring, but not to the degree that we have it today. At least when they bantered, okay, it didn't drag on for minutes on end. It was actually funny, entertaining, and they did call at least part of the frickin' match. So it was never this bad back when it was Heenan and Monsoon. It was never this bad when it was Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler. or when they had Joey Styles doing Raw for a few months there. So if his defense is, well, the announcers have always been produced the same way, then why are they so shitty? Why are they so unbearable now? Does he not realize that that makes them look even worse? I don't think he realized it when he tweeted that out. That was a pretty fucking stupid thing for him to say. So, I think that says it all. That's coming from his mouth, from his fingers. He said that. I think that speaks volumes. A poor attempt at deflecting blame for how awful the announcing is. Roman Reigns was about to go for a spear on Seth Rollins. Big Show dragged him out of the ring. He flung him through the air. He overshot the announce desk. He just went flying over the thing. And then Big Show overturned the announce desk on top of him, which Michael Cole sold like Roman's legs might have to be amputated as a result. That table is on his legs, he kept shouting. You know, they used to tell us that the ring steps weighed 1,000 pounds. I guess the announce desk weighs 2,000. But it was a nice visual of Big Show hurling this giant man through the air. I liked it. I mean, it's not often that you see a guy as big as Roman Reigns just tossed around like that, so I like the angle. I thought it was good. Next up was the Daniel Bryan announcement, which we talked about. Then we had the Raw debut of The Ascension against Miz and Mizdow, pulling double duty on the show. This sucked. No other way to say it. Some fans chanted LOD at the start. They won with a very weak-looking Fall of Man finish on Mizdow. They pinned Mizdow. They just didn't look good in there. I didn't think. I was not impressed by any of this. I was not impressed by physically how they looked and how they were dressed up. They looked like, you know, they looked like a couple of guys you would see on an independent show trying to be the Legion of Doom. I mean, that's what they looked like. In the ring, was not impressed at all. Frankly, they looked much better in the ring against Finn Balor and Hideo Itami on NXT this week. Shocking. I know. Then came the main event, which was the Cutting Edge Peep Show. It was a combination of Edge and Christian's talk shows molded into one with Seth Rollins. Now, I have a lot to say here about Seth Rollins as a promo. This is a very divisive topic here because there's a lot of people who will contend that Seth Rollins is a shitty promo. Oh my God, I can't listen to this guy drone on and on. But here's the thing, okay, you gotta put things in perspective. Seth Rollins is actually really good at remembering all of the dialogue they script for him, and he delivers it with confidence. He doesn't stutter and stammer over his words like other guys may do on the roster. He's good. He really is. I think Seth Rollins is a hell of a promo guy. But the problem is, he just goes on and on and on and on, and he says the same things over and over and over and over again. That segment, when he had his foot on Edge's neck, it would not end. It just kept going, almost like they were stalling for time. The fucking thing would not end. And this has been the pattern with almost all of Seth Rollins' promos. They're too damn long. Now, does that make him a bad promo guy? Look, they give him a certain amount of time. He's got to go out there, right? How much blame does he really deserve for how long the promos are? If they went out there and said, Seth, you got 5 minutes. Make your point, cut a promo, and get the hell out of there. I think he would be perfectly fine. I'm more impressed not even by like the boring shit that's coming out of his mouth, because that's just what's scripted for him. I'm more impressed, like I said, by his poise on the microphone, because you watch a lot of these newer guys, they don't look smooth. They don't really look like they're confident in what they're saying. This guy goes out there, he's smooth, he says it in a very, convincing way. He doesn't stammer over his words. I mean, there's something to be said for that. So I think in that respect, it's unfair to say, well, this guy's a shitty promo. No, the substance of what he's saying may be shitty. He may be fucking boring because of what they have him droning on about. And yes, his promos go on for way too long. But that does not make the guy a bad promo. I think there are two different things. I think that just means he's better in small doses. But I can see where people might think that. It's just that he's really not. So they have so much time to fill. It's awful. I mean, it's just, that's another one of those things why 3 hours is just death. I mean, and that's why we get the opening 15, 20, 30-minute promos. And boy, I can't wait for Raw this Monday when the Authority is back. I can't wait for the opening 45-minute promo on Raw this week. That's a much bigger problem. Too much talking, and too much talking for far too long, because they have so much damn time to fill. And the number of times that this guy said the word John during that final segment on Raw, oh my God. I knew right away what my intro was going to be for this week's podcast, but I hated myself for it because that meant I had to go back and listen to this entire segment all over again so I could cut the audio. Imagine having to listen to this thing all over again. The things I do for you people. I hope you don't forget that. So he's out there, and they're exchanging pleasantries, and he brings out the Big Show, and then he wants John Cena to come out, because at the end of the day, Seth Rollins wants John Cena to bring back the Authority. And of course, John Cena is not going to do that. So that's when he hits Christian in the gut with his Money in the Bank briefcase. Hell of a gut shot, too, because Christian went down, we never saw him again. And this segment went on for another 20 minutes. Never saw Christian again. He may have ruptured his appendix. So he's out of the picture. Big Show grabs Edge. He's got him down on the floor. And Rollins has Edge's head pressed up against the briefcase. He's going to curb stomp him. He's going to kill him. That's what he said later on. He's going to kill him unless John Cena comes out. Now, we joke a lot about how John Cena doesn't save anybody. Very rare that we see John Cena come down to the ring. It's like he can't be bothered. And he did come out to attempt to save Edge, although it took forever. It's not like Ed, you know, he saw this happening and he rushed out there. It was like a full minute before John Cena finally ran out. And Seth Rollins said, no, don't take another step. I'll break his neck. I'll paralyze him. He won't be able to hold his child. All of these dastardly heel things. And I actually thought it was great. It's the first time they actually let somebody be a real heel on this show in a while. But the problem is that this went on for so long. It wouldn't end. This was a segment that went 20 minutes, let's say, that could have easily been condensed to 6 or 7. It's one of the biggest problems I have with this show. So they do this angle, and John Cena's like, all right, I bring the Authority back. And just like that, John Cena, the top babyface in the company, has brought back the top heel faction. Because that was the stipulation. The only person who could bring back the Authority was John Cena. That makes John Cena look like an idiot. Now, I know they tried to do the sympathy thing with Edge. There's way too many logic holes here for this to make any sense. Where were all the other baby faces? Where was the rest of Team Cena? Where was Dolph Ziggler? Why couldn't they come out of the crowd from behind and tackle Edge and let John Cena run into the ring? Okay, so for all the people who were trying to justify this and call this a great angle, this was not a great angle. This was a cop-out. And if you're gonna call this a great angle, you can't ignore all the plot holes and all the logic gaps here in this segment. Apparently, nobody gives a shit about Edge, even though earlier in the night, John Cena in a promo said that Edge was one of the real good guys in wrestling. He was one of the true good people that he's ever met on the roster, which I'm sure endeared John Cena to everybody else. For such a good person, nobody seems to give two shits about Edge. So, Cena brings back the Authority. Some people say it's way too soon. I say, why bring them back at all? It's not a matter of too soon, which it is. It's a month after Survivor Series. They couldn't even wait until 2015 to bring these fuckers back. But I'm not even going to argue too soon. I say, why do it at all? Why must we always have heel Authority figures in power on this fucking show? The Authority storyline started in the summer of 2013. It went through almost the entire year of 2014, except for 1 month. That's a long time. Why was it inevitable that the Authority even needed to be brought back in the first place? Triple H and Stephanie, yes, they're very good in the role. They are very good as the dickish owners of the company. Stephanie especially. I think she's been the MVP on promos this year. She's awesome. That doesn't mean I wanted them back on my television every single week. You can get to a Sting Triple H match, if that's the direction they're going in, at WrestleMania without bringing back the Authority. You did not have to bring back the Authority just to get to a Sting Triple H match. So I ask again, why bring them back? Let alone 5 weeks after you built to this major stipulation match at Survivor Series. You already got plenty of mileage out of it. You got well over a year's worth of television. Can we please move on from this shit? I'm begging you, please. And it was great, too, because the Authority happened to be there. They just so happened to be there. They couldn't even wait until next week. They all soldier up the ramp, and they're posing. Brock Lesnar comes out. go back and take a look at the look on Brock Lesnar's face. He could not care at all about being there. It's almost like, you know, he's just kind of standing there waiting. He's just biding his time. He knows he's leaving. He doesn't care. So he was there. Big Show was there. They're all cheering. Out comes Triple H and Stephanie with two glasses of champagne to ring in the new year. You know, it was a major angle. I was not a fan of this just because I don't see the need to bring the Authority back. I just think it's completely pointless, and I know I sound like a broken record here. I am sick to fucking death of the heel Authority figures being in power. That's another thing. One of the worst things to happen to wrestling. Austin McMahon was fantastic. And it's like, well, Austin versus McMahon was so successful, and Eric Bischoff put himself in the NWO, and WCW was doing great ratings and great business. So we have to keep doing this year after year after year. Do you realize that when Eric Bischoff joined the NWO, I mean, we're going back to 1996, 1997. And when the Austin McMahon angle started, it was the end of 97, beginning of 98. And it's 2015, and we still have to suffer through heel Authority figures on television every single week. Like, in character, like in kayfabe, who in their right mind would want to work in pro wrestling? All these shitty bosses, one after the other, who just try to do nothing but get people fired, and they repress their roster. Who would want to become a wrestler? Why would anybody want to get in that business? Doesn't make any sense. They announced an ambulance match for the first Raw of 2015 between Bray Wyatt and Dean Ambrose. I was more shocked they actually announced the match a week in advance. That's progress. Progress heading into the new year. One last note here before we move on to NXT. This is a positive note. WWE is releasing a Shield DVD set. I believe it comes out in March. Three discs. This thing looks incredible, given the matches that are on there. There's a whole bunch of FCW matches between Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose. They have a match. It was a triple threat match between all three members of the Shield, long before they were members of the Shield. It was Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, and Leaki, which was Roman Reigns' old name down there. They have Roman Reigns, I think, first match once things converted to NXT against CJ Parker, and then obviously all of the awesome Shield matches from their run. The only thing I would have added was the match with the Rhodes brothers at Battleground in 2013. That was the one where they won their jobs back. Dusty Rhodes was at ringside, and then he embraced with his sons when the match was over. That was just phenomenal. That match was fucking great. The post-match stuff was great. That was so awesome. And that's not on the DVD set. Now, I know the Shield lost. They did lose that match, but that was such a great match. But I can almost excuse it because they've included the match with the Usos from the Money in the Bank kickoff show in 2013. That was one of my favorite matches from that year. It was so much fun to be in the building for that one in Philadelphia. They put those fucking guys on the pre-show, which was like an insult at that time, and they made everybody else choke on it that night. It was so great. There was no match, in my opinion. And the Money in the Bank matches that night were good. I think I remember liking the SmackDown one better. That was the one, the Damian Sandow one, when he shoved Cody Rhodes off the top. But that pre-show match of Money in the Bank that year was hard to top, and that was awesome. So that's on the DVD. There's a ton of great stuff. So definitely that is going to be a purchase when that thing comes out. I really wish they would just release it on the network. Or at least if you're going to put the DVD out, release it on the network like a week or two later. I really feel like they're missing out by not doing that. That could be a draw for some people to buy the network, and they don't do that. You know, people shouldn't have to go out and spend money on the DVD if they're paying $9.99 a month for the network. They should have a section where these things go up either right away, same day, or on a couple of week delay, and that way people who subscribe to the network can get access to it. I don't know why they don't do that. NXT was back with a first-run episode this week, the first of the new year. It opened with the Lucha Dragons against Jason Jordan and Ty Dillinger, non-title match. If you pay close attention before the match starts, you can see they're already teasing a breakup of Jordan and Dillinger, which is too bad. Basic match, Sin Cara got the pin on Dillinger with a sunset flip powerbomb off the top rope. The Vaudevillains attacked the champions after the match left them laying. Next week, they get their rematch from TakeOver for the tag team titles. NXT is moving to Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. starting in 2 weeks, thanks to SmackDown's move to Thursdays. That's too bad. You know, Thursday was the perfect night for me for NXT. So what I'm probably going to do, in all honesty, I'm just going to keep watching it on Thursdays. I'll just watch it on demand like I always do. It'll just be on a one-day delay for me. Up next is Big Kaz and Enzo Amore introducing Carmella, the Princess of Staten Island. Then before they could even introduce who her opponent would be, there were tons of blue pants chants from the crowd. This chick has had 2 matches, okay, maybe 3, and has yet to win one, and she is the most over diva on the roster down there. It's amazing. Of course, her opponent was Blue Pants, who came out to a big ovation. The match didn't go very long. Enzo got up on the apron, inexplicably started causing a ruckus. I'm not sure why. I'm not sure what the hell he was doing. He's on the apron, spazzing out. That distracted Carmella and allowed Blue Pants to sneak up from behind and roll her up for the pin. Yes, a distraction roll-up finish. But the crowd loved it. The announcers claimed it was the biggest upset since the 1-2-3 Kid pin Razor Ramon. I don't know about that. But Blue Pants is definitely over. I can't wait for them to turn her heel by having her come out wearing red pants. Carmella attacked Enzo after the match had to be pulled off by Big Cass, so there is trouble brewing between those three. Baron Corbin beat CJ Parker quickly with the End of Days. Stop me if you've heard this before. After the match, Corbin grabbed a microphone. I held my breath because we have not seen this guy cut a promo before on NXT television, so I did not know what to expect, but he was fine. I mean, he had like 1 line of dialogue, maybe 2. He stared at Bull Dempsey at ringside, asked him if he's just going to stand there looking scared, or are we going to do this? And then he dropped the mic, left the ring, and just went right after Bull Dempsey. Completely unprovoked. The guy was just standing there watching him. Baron Corbin didn't give a shit. He started kicking his ass. Big pull-apart brawl. Of course, like every heel in WWE, Dempsey backed off. Curtis Axel, backstage, interrupted an interview that Devin Taylor was doing with the commissioner, William Regal. He said that he wants a shot on NXT. Regal has ignored him since he asked him the first time. And Regal said, okay, I'll give you a match next week with Hideo Itami. And Devin Taylor was in the very next segment as well. She was in the ring for an interview with the NXT Women's Champion, Charlotte. Charlotte, it's weird. Like, she's cheered like she's a babyface. I could have sworn that she's been a babyface for, like, the last 3 or 4 weeks. But when she asked who was left for her to face and the crowd chanted Blue Pants at her, she told the crowd to shut up and pipe down when the champion was talking. So I'm not sure what she's supposed to be. Maybe she's supposed to be a bitch. Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch came out, surrounded the ring until Natalya's music hit, and she came down to even out the odds. Boy, it sure is a good thing she just so happened to be there. Looks like we're getting a tag team match with these four, maybe next week. They didn't announce anything. We got a video sent in by Sami Zayn, who was outside his home for the holidays and seemingly recorded this on a phone from 2005. Actually, you know, he probably did record this on a newer phone, like the new iPhone, but I have the same problem that he does. If I record a video on my phone, okay, and I have the iPhone 6, and if I record a video in HD on the phone, and I email it to somebody, or I post it on Facebook, it compresses the damn thing every single time. I wish I knew how to change that. It's the most annoying thing in the world. So this compressed video that Sami Zayn sent into to the universe, he says he'll be back real soon. He's going to be back next week, actually. He will make sure what he has to say, he says it to all of us and to Kevin Owens personally. And then we got highlights of a sit-down interview with Kevin Owens and Renee Young in an empty NXT arena. We were told this was recorded 3 weeks ago. Why they first decided to show us this now, I don't know. Renee asked Kevin Owens about ruining Sami Zayn's big moment at TakeOver if he feels he stole Sami's moment from him after being friends their whole lives. And Kevin Owens, he stood up. He was not happy with her line of questioning. And he gave her an apron powerbomb. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. He said he's 30 years old, and he's only known Sami for 12 of those years, so they're not lifelong friends. And then he stormed off. That was it. Main event was Finn Balor and Hideo Itami against The Ascension in a TakeOver rematch. The feud that will not die. This was a long match. Finn Balor got his ass kicked most of the way, sold for much of the match, got the eventual hot tag to Hideo Itami. He ran wild with kicks. Another GTS tease by Itami that was foiled. The fans were not happy about that. So at some point, we've got to get the GTS. They would not be teasing it unless they were going to eventually give it to us. And who knows? Maybe he'll give the GTS to Finn Balor. Start a feud between the two of them. Balor hit a double foot stomp off the top rope to Connor on the outside, while Itami finished off Victor in the ring with a spin kick to the back of the head for the pin. I can't believe the Ascension were the ones called up to the main roster over these two. I mean, really, who made that call? Who looked at these guys and said, it's time for the Ascension to make their way to Raw, but we'll keep these other guys down here in developmental? I mean, I know the Ascension was down there for like 2 years. I guess at some point you reach that point where it's like, all right, it's their time. We have to call them up. I just think it's funny with all the talent they have down there, and they're in this feud with two guys who are so much better than them, but they call up the Ascension. And it's no wonder they turned up to crickets on Raw and LOD chants on Monday night. Guarantee you that if Itami and Balor got called up to the main roster, even if there were crickets when they first came out, by the end of the match, the people would be into it. And also, if they give Finn Balor his full entrance on TV like they do at NXT, believe me, ain't nobody going to be sitting on their hands. I mean, the entrance they gave this guy, they clearly know he's going to be a big star. And he'll definitely get over with that entrance on the main roster. So that was it. That was NXT. A good show, if not uneventful. Not a lot of exciting stuff happened, but the action that was there was pretty good. And like I said, next week we have the Lucha Dragons and the Vaudevillains for the tag team titles. And Sami Zayn will make his very first appearance. Believe it or not, he won the title from Adrian Neville on December 11th. Sami Zayn has yet to make a single appearance in the NXT arena on this show. They've been selling this injury angle. I mean, they had the recap show last week, although they did have that one match with Charlotte and Sasha. But that's how you do an injury angle, folks. That's how you do an injury angle. You don't have the guy come back the very next week looking none the worse for wear. You don't give him 1 week off. I mean, if it's a major injury angle, you got to keep the guy out. This guy is the champion, and when he shows up next week, it will be a full month, just about, since he won the title. That's how it's done. We have a bit of TNA news here. Kurt Angle has officially re-signed with TNA, the worst-kept secret in wrestling. Kurt Angle went on, I think it was Vince Russo's podcast like a month ago, and said that he was coming back to TNA, but I guess the contract wasn't officially signed at that point. So now it is. Kurt's back. Kind of a shame. It would have been nice to have him have one last part-time run in WWE, but I guess it was not meant to be. So he is back. And also they announced that the 2015 edition of Lockdown, which is typically one of their bigger pay-per-views of the year, will not be on pay-per-view. So it looks like TNA may be completely out of the pay-per-view business altogether. Lockdown instead will be live and free on Destination America. I don't know what the air date will be, but they're actually taping it next Friday, January 9th, which is the show that Brian Blade and I are going to be at. So we will be live at Lockdown. I'll be doing some live tweeting from the Manhattan Center. They also announced that there will be a match between the Wolves and the Hardy Boys on the tapings the day before. So the January 8th tapings, the Thursday night tapings in New York City, they'll be doing that match. Again, I don't know when these are going to air. Everything's going to be on a delay. They are back on television this week. They're making their debut on Destination America this Wednesday, January 7th. They'll be live. The main event is Rude Lashley 3 for the TNA World Heavyweight title. And, I got to say, you know, I've missed seeing some of these guys on television. I'm looking forward to having TNA back and to seeing how different things are. You know, they're saying it's a fresh start, new logo, new graphics, but probably the same six-sided ring. They're going to be back in the Manhattan Center where they tape television for months. I don't know how different the show really is going to look. They'll have a new announcer. Josh Matthews is going to be with Taz, so that'll be something different. They hopefully will have a good night, because TNA, they've got to do something different. They've got to really freshen things up, yes, but I don't even know what the answer is anymore. I don't know what that one thing is they could do to really change things around for them. I think the best thing they could do is put a fresh coat of paint on things and just send those guys out there to have kick-ass matches on television. That's really the only thing they could do, I think, at this point. I think some of you guys should give TNA a shot. New year, first show on a new network. Let's give them a chance. Maybe we should. Maybe they don't deserve it. But I'm a sucker for good wrestling, so I think there'll be a lot of people probably tuning in, maybe for the first time, going to give TNA a shot. I hope they deliver. I hope they deliver. Maybe they can convert some new fans. Take a quick break. We'll be right back with the mailbag. Don't go away. Thank you guys for taking time out of your day to listen to The Sound Off. I get questions from people asking, how can I support the podcast? Well, the best way to support the show is simple. Just keep listening each and every week. Keep spreading the word about it to friends and family and retweet or share links to the episodes on Twitter and Facebook. But beyond that, you can contribute by making a PayPal donation or by signing up for a free 30-day trial of the Audible.com service. Making a PayPal donation is simple. Just log on to thesolemonster.com and you'll see the PayPal donation box on the right-hand side of the page. Enter whatever amount you'd like and click the Make a Donation button. That's it. Or sign up for a free Audible trial by entering our custom URL, audibletrial.com/solemonster. From there, you can sign up free for 30 days, which helps us out. You get one free audiobook as part of your trial that you get to keep no matter what. You can browse through their library of over 150,000 titles. Listen to your books at home, on the commute to work, at the gym, whenever, wherever. Sign up at audibletrial.com/solemonster or visit thesolemonster.com to make a donation right now. And thank you for supporting The Sound Off. Time for your questions. We got a lot of them this week. You can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. We've got an audio question from Jason in the Bronx.
What's up, Solemn Monster? My question today is about the SmackDown 6. If there were another brand split, who could you see being today's SmackDown 6? I look at a guy like Kofi. I think Ziggler could probably take the SmackDown brand and make it his own, much like Edge did. There are a bunch of other names, but of course I can't think of them now. That's why I pose the question to you.
Who could be a modern SmackDown 6 from the current roster? I was like jotting down some names, and I actually had two of them down. I took two off. My six, if I had to put six guys, now, for those who don't know, the SmackDown 6 were a collection of really great workers that were part of the SmackDown brand. It would have been back in, like, I want to say 03, but it may have been 02, 03, back around the time that Paul Heyman was writing the show. It was Kurt Angle, Chris Benoit, Edge, Rey Mysterio, Eddie and Chavo. And they were the core of that show, and that was when SmackDown was on fire. I mean, SmackDown was arguably the A show at that time, much better action, much more entertaining than Raw was at that point in time. So what would a modern SmackDown 6 be? What would a modern SmackDown 6 look like? I could see Daniel Bryan, because you got to have at least one main event guy in there to help carry things. I think Daniel Bryan, Dolph Ziggler, Seth Rollins, Cesaro, and the Usos. I see a lot of Usos hate online, too. People are getting tired of them. I mean, I understand part of that in that we see these guys so many times. You do get tired of them after a while, but the Usos are really good. I mean, I am perfectly fine with, you know, an Usos match. Usually, more often than not, it's one of the better matches on the show. I think they just need new teams to wrestle. That's really the problem here. We see them facing the same guys over and over again, and it gets tiring after a while. That does not make the Usos bad. I'm seeing a lot of hate for guys that really don't deserve the hate, and I'm not quite sure where it's coming from. The only thing I can think of is it's just overexposure and not enough new teams for them to face, but the Usos are really good. I think they would round out a new SmackDown 6. So I think that would be a good core. I think that would be a good core of guys to have right there. Now, if you want to include NXT guys, any of those new guys could easily help carry that brand. I mean, hell, right now, I would argue that right now NXT has its own SmackDown 6 with Adrian Neville, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, Finn Balor, Hideo Itami, and I'll throw Charlotte in there as well. Charlotte's the best female performer in the entire company right now. So they've got their own SmackDown 6 on NXT. I almost would hate to see it broken up. Derek had an interesting observation about the finish from Raw on Monday night. He says, is it just me or does the abrupt return of the Authority remind you of Steve Austin's return in the fall of 2003? At Survivor Series that year, Team Bischoff beat Team Austin, and as per the stipulation, Steve Austin was fired. About a month later, Austin returned on Raw as the dreaded Sheriff and rendered the entire point of the match at the pay-per-view pointless. Sound familiar? Yes, WWE, ignoring match stipulations now for over 10 years. At least they're consistent. I got questions from multiple people this week, so I figured I'll just lump it into one question here, asking for my thoughts on this news that was reported in this week's Wrestling Observer newsletter, that after everything that happened with CM Punk and Alberto Del Rio, WWE has put in all performer contracts that if they are fired for disciplinary reasons, they forfeit all merchandise rights and they cannot work in pro wrestling or MMA for one full year. I don't know how they can legally amend existing talent contracts. Maybe they did. Or maybe this only applies to contracts going forward. That sounds more reasonable. Although we're not dealing with very reasonable people here. I mean, look, they could put anything they want in those contracts. It's their company. That doesn't mean it's going to hold up in a court of law. You know, I can understand their point of view on this, in that if there's a guy who, let's say, tries to get himself intentionally fired so that he can go work somewhere else, you know, WWE has, in theory, spent a lot of time getting this person over to their audience, months, maybe years, giving them precious television time that a lot of other guys don't get. So they're trying to get this person over. And for them to get themselves fired on purpose so they can go work for TNA or go work for Lucha Underground or UFC, you know, I could see from their perspective how they would feel cheated by that. So let's prevent them from doing that for a year. That's the mentality behind it. Now, do I agree with that? No, you can't tell somebody that you're not allowed to make a living for the next 12 months. You can't say, well, you can go be something else. Go be an accountant. Go bag groceries. You can't tell somebody that they can't make a living doing what they do for an entire year. Now, I know they have the 90-day clauses built into their contracts. That at least is a little more reasonable. But a year, to me, is too long. I mean, it's ridiculous. And I don't see any court upholding that. And all it takes is one or two wrestlers that are really determined to fight them on this, or maybe have a little bit of money in the bank to contest it and go to court with them. And there's no way that a court's going to hold that up and side with WWE. It's not going to happen. So they could put whatever the hell they want to in writing. I think it's more of a scare tactic than anything else, because most of those guys are not going to want to fight WWE, or they're not going to have the money to fight WWE in some long court battle. Or they're just not going to want to get on WWE's shit list and file suit against them or fight them on this, and then they're blackballed from the company. I mean, that's why guys won't do it. But all it takes is one or two. All it takes is a guy like Del Rio or a guy like Punk. I don't see this holding up. I don't see how they can enforce that. It's like when they tried to enforce a 10-year non-compete that Brock Lesnar signed because he was so desperate to get out of that company and he wanted to become a football player, and that didn't work out. So now it's like, well, okay, I'm going to go back to wrestling. And they were like, nope, you signed a 10-year non-compete. How do you tell somebody that they can't make a living doing what they do for fucking 10 years? It's a joke. And Brock knew it was a joke, and so he went to New Japan anyway. And nothing happened. And then he went to UFC, because he knew this is unenforceable. This is bullshit. And that's what this is. I think this is bullshit. And you know what, also, I look at that and I laugh, because it's like I talked about before. I just went on a whole rant about this like a month ago. The independent contractor status. Independent contractor, my ass. The whole thing is a farce. They're not really independent contractors, but as long as these guys don't band together and call WWE out on it and they sign the contracts, then, you know, nothing's ever going to change. I'm not saying they should form a union, necessarily, because I don't think that's going to work either. But it's going to take a sizable group of wrestlers, including at least some bigger names, to call them out on that. And that's not ever going to happen. So this whole independent contractor farce is just going to continue on for who knows how long, indefinitely. Chuck Lunatic Lentz from Big Rock, Illinois. Chuck has been one of our biggest supporters all year long, and it's fitting that I include a question from him in the first sound off of the new year. After watching the ending to Raw this week, my only thought was, if they were going to bring the Authority back, why not have Rollins go over Cena at TLC? It would have been a surprise finish, and they could have done a trade. Cena brings back the Authority. The Authority names Cena the number one contender. Does that make sense, or is that too heel of a move for Cena's character? I wouldn't have done it that way. I would have just had a match between them without the title shot being on the line and just had Rollins beat him. Especially because it was a tables match. It's not like he'd be pinning John Cena clean in the center of the ring. Now, some people may argue, well, John Cena is getting the title shot at the Royal Rumble, so he can't lose to Seth Rollins. He should win. Sure he can. He can lose. Absolutely. Remember a little match called Three Stages of Hell? How quickly people forget. Steve Austin and Triple H, 2001. Go look it up. Austin won the Royal Rumble that year. He was wrestling Rock for the title of WrestleMania in the main event. And the month before, he wrestled Triple H at No Way Out, and Triple H beat him. He beat Austin, who was the number one contender. Now, it would have made more sense not to turn Austin heel, in Texas no less, and have Triple H challenge him for the title after WrestleMania with Rock. You know, he was going away to make movies. But instead, they turned Austin heel, and they made them a tag team, and they never really recovered from that. You know, since 2001, wrestling has never been as hot as it was back then. But the point is, there's a precedent for this. You could have beaten John Cena. Seth Rollins has the briefcase. He's not a schlub. He's the top heel in the company right now. It would not have been the end of the world, and it would have been a big win for Seth Rollins. Rollins has way more to gain from a big win like that than Cena has to lose from a loss. The guy is Teflon. 10 years now, 12 years. The guy is Teflon. Okay, he can lose. They need to be in star creation mode right now. And when it comes to John Cena, they've done a poor job this year. There was no reason for Bray Wyatt to lose that match to John Cena at WrestleMania. Coming off that hot feud with the Shield, I think it was Wyatt who got the pin on Roman Reigns, their boy, okay, in that first match at the Elimination Chamber. He had the big entrance at WrestleMania, performing his music, and then he loses. Then he gets a bullshit win in that cage match on the next pay-per-view, which was a joke. And then he loses again, and Wyatt has never been the same since that feud with John Cena. He's had some main events with Dean Ambrose recently, which is nice to see. But explain to me what that has to do with John Cena. You will have people that credit John Cena. Hey, look, Bray Wyatt's in the main event right now. You can credit John Cena for that. Oh, really? How do you reach that conclusion? You cannot argue that Bray Wyatt has not lost a ton of steam from where he was at the beginning of the year. You can't. The people trying to argue that Bray Wyatt is somehow better off because of the feud, because of the program with John Cena, are brain damaged. These are brain damaged people who are trying to put forth that narrative. And I won't make fun of them because it's not cool to make fun of people with brain damage, but they are. Then you look at the way they split up the Wyatt family. One of the worst splits I've ever seen. They do the first Harper vs. Rowan match on Raw as a throwaway. It means nothing. They do Wyatt vs. Rowan on SmackDown this week, and it means nothing. And why should it? Rowan was just a stepping stone for the Big Show to look strong before he loses to Roman Reigns. Rowan is not very good on his own. He's just not. And I look at all three members since the split, and not one of them, I would argue, is better off now than they were before. Harper could have branched out as a singles guy while he was still part of the Wyatt family. He didn't have to break him up to make him a single star. He won the Intercontinental title, didn't win a single match after that, and then lost it right back to Dolph. Now he's just sort of hanging around. You would be a fool to think that any of this was a good idea. But it's amazing to me that there are still people, including people with a platform to put this out there, that will still argue until they're blue in the face that somehow John Cena is responsible for Bray Wyatt being in main events now with Dean Ambrose. Oh, that John Cena, he sure elevated that guy. I mean, for God's sakes, take a look at what happened to Bray Wyatt. What about the fucking 5 months after that last match at Payback? Wasn't there like a month or two that went by where Bray Wyatt, after the Jericho feud, wasn't even on television? I mean, I'm not a John Cena hater the way that other people are, but I mean, you gotta have your head in the fucking sand to honestly think that this guy was better off because of that feud. That it actually helped make him somehow. I don't know about you, but when 2014 started, one of the first things I can remember was Bray Wyatt going out there at the Royal Rumble and having the best match on the card with Daniel Bryan and beating Daniel Bryan clean. Daniel Bryan, who was more over at that time than John Cena. He beat him in the opening match of the Royal Rumble, and then got the big win, you know, the Wyatts and the Shield at the Elimination Chamber. The guy was on a roll, and then he hit a wall. He hit a wall of hustle, loyalty, and respect. But there are still people out there, the Cena apologists, who they insist, boy, you know, these people are just, they're negative ninnies. They're negative for the sake of being negative. These people are fucking brain damaged. And it's not nice to point and laugh. But I have to point it out because it's crazy to me that there are still people who honestly believe that. Imran from the UK. Boy, I'm all fired up now. Since the plan looks to be either Bryan or Reigns against Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 31, I was thinking, why not have Dolph Ziggler turn tweener or heel? Since the Authority has returned and Ziggler on the Raw post-show seemed kind of pissed off, why not have Ziggler cost Cena his match against Lesnar, thus starting a feud which would go to WrestleMania, and the story could be that Ziggler is pissed off that John Cena gave in to the Authority. It's not a bad idea. I really hope that Dolph Ziggler has some kind of high-profile match and they don't just stick him in the Andre Battle Royal. I think that would be a complete waste. And I don't see that, you know, Dolph Ziggler being the guy to beat Rusev. So it's like, what other match do you put him in? I did pitch the idea for a match with Triple H if they wanted to take Sting and put him with The Undertaker. All of this is predicated on The Undertaker wrestling, which I'm still not sure he is or not. But Ziggler-Triple H would be a big match for Ziggler. Ziggler-Cena? Yeah, I mean, that would be a huge match, but I do worry. You know, I worry about the outcome and what may happen. Ziggler's another one. Got a big win on pay-per-view over John Cena. Big conquering win with the Money in the Bank briefcase high in the air. He had AJ Lee with him. And, you know, it kind of goes back to me being angry earlier when I was talking about them squandering that Cesaro win over Randy Orton, who was the champion at that time. When you give big wins like that away against the top stars in the company, don't fucking squander it. Take advantage of it. Make a new star out of it. And they had that chance with Ziggler, but after Ziggler beat Cena in that ladder match at TLC 2 years ago, it was, you know, or 3 years ago now, they did nothing. I mean, they brought it back on Raw and Cena beat him, and that was it. It's like, why even bother? So I would worry about that. I would hope that this time things, you know, were a little bit different. Although if Ziggler was the heel, you could have Cena beat him. I guess it wouldn't be the end of the world to have John Cena beat, you know, Dolph Ziggler if he was a heel. I almost think there would be more juice in doing a babyface match between the two of them and let the fans cheer for whoever they want to cheer for. Because look, in storyline, Dolph Ziggler has a legitimate gripe. Look at all the hell that the Authority put this guy through for weeks and weeks and weeks. And he gets the big pinfall at Survivor Series. He's heralded as the big hero who helped oust the Authority, him and Sting. And in one fell swoop, John Cena says, I bring back the Authority. And that just makes Dolph Ziggler's life a living hell. Dolph Ziggler should be pissed off at John Cena. He should confront him. Jeremy, first-time emailer. If by some miracle another promotion was to start beating the crap out of WWE in the ratings, what actions do you think WWE would take to win back their audience? Possibly going back to an attitude style of programming, turn Cena heel, or something completely different? See, that's the beautiful thing about competition, right? It really is the best motivator. It's also one of the great tragedies of WCW going out of business, even though they deserved it. You know, it's impossible to say exactly what they would do. I don't think they would go back to pushing the envelope like they did back then because it's just a different time. You know, everything is different. Society is different. Television is different. The company is different. It's so much more corporate. You know, they've got the PG initiative because they have sponsors that they don't want to lose. And they have the relationship with Mattel. And they have deals with Kmart and all these other companies. And they don't want to jeopardize that. So no, I don't think we would suddenly see a return to the Attitude Era. I would like to think that what we would see is they would make an even better effort to phase down some of the guys like Orton and Cena. And when I say phase down, look, they're big stars. So if you're competing against another company, I'm not saying take John Cena and Randy Orton off TV. They're two of your biggest stars. What I'm saying is phase them down in that you put more of the focus on the newer guys. You have to get newer faces over. And just do the right thing. They do so many little things wrong and it makes you scratch your head. Like, why did they do that? Why did they make that decision? Why did they do that? You know, cut the bullshit. Cut the bullshit and get back to doing what you do best. That's why people are turning away in droves. That's why more people are listening to my podcast and they don't even watch the show anymore. They just listen to me so they can get a recap of what's going on. Shouldn't be that way. Everybody who's listening to a wrestling podcast should be a wrestling fan who watches a wrestling show. And just using me and my show as, you know, an example, I'm seeing just the opposite. And that's kind of scary. I mean, I'm happy they're listening to me, but that's kind of scary. People ask me all the time, you know, if you didn't do the podcast, would you still be watching Raw every single week? Honestly, I don't think so. I wouldn't stop watching completely, but would I watch all 3 hours every single week? No, I don't think I would. And I don't think I would miss it either. I mean, I would miss, you know, having good wrestling and you know, exciting, fun stuff to watch, but I don't think I would miss the droning promos and the pointless matches and the comedy. And no, I think that's why a lot of people have been able to turn it off. So it's not like, well, you got to turn John Cena heel and you got to start showing tits and ass again. I don't think you have to do that. I think you just have to put forth a product that people don't feel insulted by, that people aren't angered by. If guys start to get over on their own, guess what? Don't hide from it. Don't bury them just because they're getting over on their own. Run with it. You know, do a better job of kind of feeling the pulse of who's over and who's not and going with your hot hand. And I don't think they do that enough. I think they have to kind of mold and shape things the way that they want it to be. And they got their army of writers, and that's what they pay them for. And so if they don't come up with something and it happens organically, it's almost like they're offended by that. You know, I just think they have to do a better job of listening to their audience. That's not that hard. Ron in St. Louis, I was watching your all-time favorite Royal Rumble from 1992, and I saw the Macho Man throw himself over the top rope to get Jake Roberts, and the referees allowed him to get back into the ring to compete. Currently, if you throw yourself over the top rope, you are eliminated. Can you tell me when that rule of eliminating yourself by going over the top rope began? Well, it's funny you mentioned that. I just got done watching the 1992 Royal Rumble as well on the live feed of the network the other day. I actually watched the 1992 Royal Rumble pay-per-view and the entire 1993 Royal Rumble pay-per-view. I watched that the other night. And it's weird, too, because I always was very fond of the 93 Rumble. I still am. I like on the undercard, they had Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty. Even the opening match with the Steiner brothers and the Beverly brothers was actually better than I remember it being. But I watched that 93 Royal Rumble match, and boy, it was not very good. It's not a horrible Rumble, but there was a lot of dead space. I mean, there were parts of the match that were just dead silent, boring, just a bunch of nobodies in the ring. I mean, in a lot of ways, just the opposite of 1992. The one thing they did in the 93 Rumble, I know I'm getting off point here, but the one thing they did in the 93 Rumble that I liked, and it got over, Bob Backlund, okay? Bob Backlund was 43 years old. They brought him back. Nobody cared. He had no theme music. He just kind of went out there. He looked all goofy. And as the Rumble went on, because he entered at like number two, I think. I think he was number two. Yeah, because Flair was number one. I think Backlund was number two. People didn't care. I mean, they didn't care. They didn't know who this guy was. As the Rumble went on, because Backlund had the Iron Man record that year, he went almost the entire way. He was in the final three. The people were into it. Every time they would try to dump out Backlund, like 30 minutes in, people were like, no, no, no. When he would come back in the ring, they would cheer. When he got eliminated by Yokozuna, the place booed. So like that story they told got over. But the rest of the Rumble was really nothing to sing home about. And the finish to the 93 Rumble to this day is one of the more comically ridiculous finishes to a Royal Rumble. You got the Macho Man in there with Yokozuna. He gets Yokozuna down. He gives him the big elbow off the top. This is Randy Savage. This is a veteran who has been in Royal Rumbles before. He's been in the company for years and years and years. And instead, he goes to cover Yokozuna. He goes to make a pin, which is ridiculous enough. But then Yokozuna, the idea was that Yokozuna is so strong, he is going to push up and propel Randy Savage out over the top rope and to the floor. But you watch this, and it's comical, because Savage just, he jumped. He had to jump. He jumped into the air and basically eliminated himself. So, anyway, a little off subject there, but the 93 Royal Rumble match is not quite as good as I remember it being. 92, on the other hand, is just fucking phenomenal. Now, the spot that you mentioned, not the first time, obviously, that Randy Savage has dumped himself out. I think what happened there is Savage was not supposed to go out over the top rope, but if you watch any old Randy Savage matches, and this is why his knees were so shot later in his career, he would propel himself out over the top rope. He wouldn't just climb through the ropes, go under the bottom rope. He would always dive out over the top rope and land on his knees and his feet. So he had this blood feud with Jake Roberts that was going on at the time. It was one of the many little stories that were interwoven into the Rumble match in 92. So he gets in there and he eliminates Jake almost instantly. Okay, so Jake is gone. And almost like in a fit of rage, he decides to go out of the ring after Jake and continue pummeling him. But he went out over the top rope. And I think he was just so used to doing it that way, he didn't realize. Because on commentary, you know, they're talking about, oh, what an idiot. You know, the title is on the line in this Rumble, and this guy just blew it. He just eliminated himself. He let his emotions get the best of him. And Monsoon and Heenan both are saying this. And then there's a pause in the commentary, almost like Vince is in their ear or somebody is in their ear telling them, no. Like, he's supposed to be in there. Like, just say that you need to be eliminated by somebody else. So then Bobby Heenan pipes up. He goes, oh, wait a minute, Monsoon. No. I think Savage is still in because he wasn't thrown out. You have to be propelled by somebody else out of the ring. And even Monsoon is a little leery. He's like, all right, I don't know about that. I'll take your word for it. So I think that's what happened. I think it was a botch. I think Savage didn't realize it at the time. They called an audible. They got him back in there because he was one of the final four in the ring. Now, you know, it wasn't like Savage really did much after that. You could have just let Savage be eliminated and had, you know, Roddy Piper in the final four with Sid, Flair, and Hogan. I think that would have been fine. Piper had won the Intercontinental title earlier in the night, so he was going for the WWF title. And, you could have just let Savage be gone and, you know, let Piper go to the end if they wanted to. But, you know, they had their plan, and they had to get Savage back in there. So as far as your question, you know, when did this rule of eliminating yourself by going over the top start? In 89, in the 89 Royal Rumble, Andre the Giant eliminated himself because he had this irrational fear of snakes. At the time, he was feuding with Jake the Snake, and so Jake was in there with the Snake, and Andre, every time the Snake was in there, he would dive out of the ring, over the top rope, and just clutch his heart like he was having a heart attack. He did that in the 89 Rumble. He eliminated himself. So that was the first instance, I think, of that happening. But, you know, the rule has changed over the years. Again, you think in 92, it was a botch because they said you have to be thrown out by somebody else. Meanwhile, if you look at, like, 97, they had a whole bunch of Mexican wrestlers in there. Mil Máscaras was in the Rumble. Mil Máscaras, boy, this guy, let me tell you, nobody could eliminate him. I guess that must have been the rule. So this guy wouldn't put anybody over, and he wouldn't, you know, that was kind of his MO. And it was so bad that not only could nobody eliminate him from the Royal Rumble, he eliminated himself. I remember that. He climbed to the top rope, and he did a dive onto somebody out on the floor. Fucking guy wouldn't even let somebody dump him out of the Royal Rumble match. So in later years, people have freely eliminated themselves. Drew Carey in 2001, you know, he took a powder and got the hell out of there. So the first instance of that happening would have been Andre, I think, in 89. Nissim Levy, the Authority is back, and I was far from impressed. The whole Survivor Series angle just went down the toilet. In your opinion, what were WWE's worst angle undoings? Angles that were built up very well, only to have their outcome undone in a quick, rushed, and unconvincing way. I will just give you one date. That date is July 9, 2001. That is one of the best examples I can give you. It went from being one of the best angles they've ever done in the history of Monday Night Raw to one of the worst by the end of the show. In one night, they took something that was so awesome and had so much promise and was so exciting, and by the end of the night, it was like, what the hell just happened? That was the night that they did the ECW reunion. Remember, Paul Heyman was on commentary with Jim Ross. All the ECW guys come out. They're face-to-face, nose-to-nose now with the WWE guys. And the ECW guys who had been part of the WWE roster, like Raven, like the Dudleys, like Taz, all of a sudden, they're face-to-face with, I think it was Tommy Dreamer and Rob Van Dam did a run-in. That was their debut. All of a sudden, those guys turn. Now they're standing shoulder to shoulder with Van Dam and Tommy Dreamer, and they're all facing Jericho and Kane, and they all start beating the shit out of the two WWE guys. And Heyman's going crazy on commentary. JR's going crazy on commentary. Heyman gets in the ring, cuts this promo. This was in the middle of the invasion. So you had WWE and WCW feuding. Well, now all of a sudden you had ECW back together, led by Heyman as this renegade third faction. And it was awesome. You know, everyone thought we're going to get a three-way war here. WWE, WCW, ECW. And then an hour later, at the end of the night, they merged WCW and ECW. They formed this thing called the Alliance. And they trotted Stephanie McMahon out as the new owner of ECW. I mean, give me a fucking break. So much promise and just right down the toilet. All in one night. July 9, 2001. A day that will live on in infamy. Gary from Belrose, Queens. You've often stated that you don't think WWE needs any new belts because they don't know what to do with the ones they have now. I can't really argue with that. Nevertheless, with all the talented women on the roster, both main and NXT, do you see value in a Divas Tag Team Championship? Maybe not now, but potentially down the road when Triple H takes over, given his supposed love of tag teams. My hope is that it would provide a means to showcase more female talent while allowing them to build stories around something other than reality shows, boys, and being crazy. If they had the women to do it, I would be open to it. I'd be okay with that if I knew they were actually going to do something with them and they were going to feature them. And you know, the reason I feel that way, I was just talking about the 92 Rumble and the 93 Rumble. Well, I was also watching the 88 Royal Rumble on the network, which was the very first Royal Rumble show that aired on USA Network. And there was a match on that show between the Jumping Bomb Angels and the Glamour Girls, which had, you know, they had a big feud. I think every Jumping Bomb Angels match I ever saw in WWE was against the Glamour Girls, Judy Martin and Leilani Kai. The Jumping Bomb Angels, by the way, in case you don't know, they're fucking awesome. Go back and watch as many Jumping Bomb Angels matches as you can find. Those women were great. I saw a ton of house show matches with them and the Glamour Girls at like MSG and you know, over the years. I don't know if it was on YouTube or on the old Classics on Demand service, because they stopped uploading new house shows to the network. Just inexplicably, they just stopped one day. Maybe they're on there as well, but the Jumping Bomb Angels were fucking great. I mean, if they had women like that, and they really wanted to put some focus on a tag team division, I'd be okay with that. I'd be okay with some Divas tag team titles. Jumping Bomb Angels, though, I'm telling you, you know, I was talking about the Hall of Fame a few weeks ago and trying to think of women that could go in. I said Medusa. I thought Medusa might go in next year, in 2015. The Jumping Bomb Angels, I think, also deserve a spot in the WWE Hall of Fame. I really do. I think if they reach that point where it's like, we need women to put in there, the Jumping Bomb Angels would be a fine choice. They were great. Paul Tate in Taos, New Mexico. Did Ric Flair's abrupt departure destroy WrestleMania 9 preparations? As someone who grew up watching WWF in the late 80s, I was never happy with WrestleMania 9. I read somewhere that Hogan vs. Flair did not happen at WrestleMania 8 due to Hogan wanting different in 1992, but being open to the match at WrestleMania 9. Flair was a big player throughout 1992 and also in the 93 Rumble. He was then gone, leaving a hole which WWE appears to have handled badly. There are 1992 Survivor Series posters with Savage Warrior against Flair and Ramon as the cover, with Big Boss Man vs. Nails as the other match on the poster. Of course, Mr. Perfect replaced Warrior. Fast forward 2 months to the Royal Rumble, and Brett vs. Razor is on the cover, and other matches are Shawn Michaels vs. Marty Jannetty, Beverly Brothers against the Steiners, and Bam Bam Bigelow against the Big Boss Man. Of these, Jannetty, Beverly Brothers, Bam Bam, and Boss Man did not fight at WrestleMania 9. Also not competing from the Survivor Series cover I mentioned are Warrior, Flair, Savage, and Nails. In other words, the pay-per-views to prepare for the biggest show of 1993 did not strategically place wrestlers properly, and fans got a misorganized show, which good performers from previous pay-per-views were missing. Flair and Warrior leaving should not have mattered, as Hulk and Beefcake were back, but were poorly used, as Flair and Warrior's departure to blame. That's a lot to cover. Let's just take this one step at a time. So the reason that Warrior was not at the Rumble, the reason that Warrior was not at WrestleMania 9, and Bret Hart has always maintained that he was told the Ultimate Warrior was going to put him over at the Royal Rumble. I find that very hard to believe, but that's why Warrior was gone. It had nothing to do with like poor planning or anything like that. They fired Bulldog, they fired the Warrior. And so that You can't put that on WWE. Okay, those guys got popped for drug violations. They were gone. I was thinking about this the other day, though, when I was watching the... you mentioned the 93 Rumble. And Brett defended on that show against Razor Ramon. And I'm watching that, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, the way things played out in 1993, I think one way to go, and they couldn't do this because he had been fired, but I always, you know, I always wondered what the plan would have been had those guys been around. And for Bulldog especially, Bulldog had beaten Brett at SummerSlam 92 in Wembley, got a big win over him, won the Intercontinental title. Had the Bulldog stuck around, I think they could have built to a rematch at SummerSlam in 93 with Brett and Bulldog for Brett's title, and this time Brett goes over and Brett wins. You know, he kind of, Bulldog kind of returns the favor. And I think that would have been a big match. So, it didn't happen. I know they had plans for a Brett-Hogan match at SummerSlam. There was at least one poster. I don't know if it's still out there, but there were definitely posters that were prepared for Brett versus Hogan, and Hogan didn't want to put Brett over. He was too small. So he said, I'll lose to the big, you know, the big fat fake Japanese guy who's not really Japanese. Which is another thing, by the way. I'm watching that 93 Rumble, and Yokozuna wins the whole thing. And, you know, you watch it now. I mean, it was a lot easier to believe when you were a kid, but you watch it now. It's so obvious this guy is not Japanese. But he wins the Royal Rumble. He looks dead in the camera. Maybe it was right before he won the match. He looks dead in the camera, and he's like, Samoa! I'm like, what? So, yeah, maybe he was a Japanese guy who just happened to love vacationing in Samoa. I don't know. He was a proud Samoan, that much is for sure. So there are a lot of questions that really can't be answered. Is it, you know, the fault of Ric Flair and Warrior being gone that kind of screwed up plans for WrestleMania 9? I don't think so, because the whole reason behind Flair's departure is that he was being phased down. And Flair had an understanding with Vince McMahon that if there ever came a time where he was no longer going to be featured as a top guy in main events, and he was going to be pushed down the card, that if he wanted to, Vince would let him go back to WCW. Which sounds bizarre, that Vince McMahon would agree to something like that, but that's exactly what happened. I don't even think it was anything in writing. I think it was a gentleman's agreement between them, and he started to get phased down. He was not going to be featured in the championship picture anymore. He wanted to go back to WCW. I mean, that's where he came from. You know, Flair was WCW. And he had a good year, he had a good run in WWE, but he could see that the time was, you know, was upon us for him to go back. And Vince let him go back. So he was going to be gone no matter what, and even if he wasn't, Flair would not have had anything to do with any of the main event matches on that card. I don't know what match he would have had, but it wouldn't have been in the main event. So Flair leaving had little to do, I think, with that WrestleMania 9 card that we ended up getting. Warrior, maybe more so, because I'm sure Warrior would have been in a top match, if not the championship match on that show. But no, I don't think so. I don't think it had a really big impact. I just think they were, you know, they had Yokozuna, their new big monster, and they wanted to get him over. And then they had this great plan to swerve everybody and have Hogan win the title at the end of the night, which I loved as a kid. Looking back on it now, not so much. But all the little Hulkamaniacs went crazy. All my friends that were Hogan fans loved it. I had one friend who absolutely hated Hogan. He was thoroughly disgusted with it. But I don't really think Flair's departure had a great effect on it. And guys like Jannetty, Bam Bam, the Beverly Brothers, I don't know what to make of that, because I know Jannetty, I think Jannetty got fired again. He might have gotten fired. It was a weird thing with Jannetty, because they did the angle on the barbershop at the beginning of 92. And then Jannetty disappeared. He wasn't even in the Rumble that year. Michaels was. But it wasn't until the following Royal Rumble in 93 that they actually had their first match. So Jannetty was gone for a year. And I think it may have had to do with drugs. So then he comes back a year later, has the match with Shawn at the Rumble. Shawn wins. And then Jannetty disappears again. And he doesn't show up until May. That's when he showed up on Raw in the disguise. And he beat Shawn for the Intercontinental title on that show. So where was he in those 3 or 4 months? I think he may have been fired again. So Jannetty was a weird one. So he was gone. Bam Bam, I don't know. You know, Bam Bam was there. You know, he was in the finals of the King of the Ring in June. But he didn't have a match on the WrestleMania card. He may have had a dark match. Maybe they got bumped from the pay-per-view. So yeah, it was a little weird that he wasn't on there. Boss Man, I think, may have been gone. I think Boss Man quit or was fired that year. I think, is when he left WWE. I don't remember exactly what month. Nails, we all know what happened to Nails. Nails tried to kill Vince McMahon, so that's an easy way to lose your job. So he was gone. I just think it was more an unfortunate series of circumstances, and that was what they felt was the best card they could do. They felt that Giant Gonzalez and The Undertaker was going to be this great draw, and it wasn't. They had Luger and Mr. Perfect, which had some marquee value. It wasn't a good match, but I could see why they put it together. You know, Bobby Heenan brought Luger in. Bobby Heenan used to manage Mr. Perfect, so it made sense. It was just, it was a different time back then. It's so weird when I think, like think of the tag team titles, for example. Like, at the Rumble in 92, LOD defended the belt against the Natural Disasters, and they actually lost by countout, okay? But they were the champions. Well, fast forward to WrestleMania 8, Money Inc. are the tag team champions. So what happened in between? LOD dropped the belts at a house show that I think they demanded not be recorded, so I don't think there's any footage of it. But they lost them on a house show. And I think what happened was they got popped also for drugs, so that's why they didn't have a match. They did a promo at WrestleMania that year. But they changed the tag team titles at a house show. You try to follow the lineage of those belts, and it gets a little murky. 93, kind of the same thing. You know, Money Inc. are the tag team champions. They went back and forth a whole bunch of times with the Steiners. I don't think the Steiner brothers got a single tag team title win on television. I think the two or three times they held those belts, I think... were all on live events. I mean, that whole period was just, it's just very different. Very different from what you would see today. But I love it. I love that era of wrestling. I mean, business may have been in the shitter, but I loved it. Before we end, I got a note from my buddy James Alexander that a good friend of his and someone who I know is friends with several people who listen to this show, James Bailey, passed away this week, just 3 weeks shy of his 30th birthday. Due to complications from diabetes. He was a huge wrestling fan. He recently plunked down his money to attend the Night of Champions pay-per-view in Nashville. Anybody who would fly around the country to attend a wrestling show is a hardcore fan like you and I. And so I just wanted to extend my condolences to his friends and family. It's a crappy way to start out the new year, but he will not be forgotten. If you have questions, again, keep emailing them to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Also, leave us a review in Stitcher or in iTunes. That helps out the show a lot. A lot of you guys have left some really positive feedback for others who may have never listened to an episode of The Sound Off and may not know what it's all about. So anytime you rate the show and you leave a review, it helps us out a lot. So please consider doing that on iTunes and on Stitcher. Follow me on Twitter @Solemonster whenever I watch the New Japan pay-per-view this weekend, which probably won't be until Sunday night. I will be live tweeting my thoughts, and of course on Monday night, as I always do during Raw, the first Raw of 2015 coming up. So @Solemonster is the place to go for that. Facebook.com/TheSolemonster is my profile page. We have a fan page. We have a group page. To get access to the group, you got to like the fan page. So that's part of the process there. And also subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheSolemonster. There should be a new Sound Off Extra, probably an inbox, going up, possibly on Sunday. Being sick, I haven't really had the time that I thought I would to put all of the questions together. I'm hoping in the next couple of days I will. So if it doesn't happen this weekend, it'll happen very soon. And whenever a Sound Off Extra goes up on our YouTube channel, if you are a subscriber, you will be the first to be notified. So head on over there and subscribe. And that about does it for this week. The first Sound Off of 2015 in the books. Sick and all. See? I made it through. This is one of the longer shows I've done, too, in the last few weeks. We will be back with a brand new episode, episode number 363, next weekend, talking wrestling. So until then, be well, stay safe. Hopefully you're feeling a lot better than I am right now. And we'll see you right back here again next week. Take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solemonster Sounds Off.
If we get another John Cena versus Randy Orton match, so help me God, I will put a voodoo curse on everybody in that company. And if you think I'm joking, just try me. I have my little voodoo doll I bought when I was in New Orleans for WrestleMania. I'm looking at it right now across the room. It's right over there. It's got a white pin for good luck and a black pin for evil. Don't make me go black on your ass.
Solemonster Sounds Off.
since 2007. The Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters Sound Off?